Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer and Madman Machine Show 140 coming to you on New Year's Eve. Yes, welcome, welcome to the show. I am coming to you on the 31st of December, 2008, the waning days of the old year, the historically bad year, and we certainly hope that 2009 will be better than 2008, although hope is not something you invest with. Welcome, everybody. Paul Douglas Boyer here. The Madman Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. Coming up on this show, I will tell you how to earn $400,000 in a month. We'll also talk about what Cramer says is the biggest Ponzi scheme. I'll tell you about my Christmas vacation. We'll get into why I'm not going to reveal the results of the predictions from 2008 just yet, and also the results of the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown just yet. We'll play Guru Roulette. We'll have something in the tool crib. And we even have an entry in the Learning Earnings segment. Well, we kept flip-flopping on what we were going to do for Christmas this year. First, we told you we were going to go to Huntington, and then we told you we were not going to go to Huntington, and then it turns out we did go to Huntington. First of all, we stopped at Seven Springs, Pennsylvania on the Monday and skied that night, and then the next day, Tuesday, that night that we skied, temperature 9 degrees, wind chill minus 3. Thank you very much. Very cold and unpleasant. Tuesday was much better, a little warmer, and we had some good skiing fun there. Went on to Huntington. We did stop at Steak and Shake and had a nice meal. We did some geocaching while we were in Huntington. That was a lot of fun. In fact, one day we went out. I think it was the day after Christmas or the couple days after Christmas. It was up to 72 degrees outside that we were geocaching around Huntington, West Virginia. Fantastic fun for the whole family there. What are your New Year's resolutions this year? Here are some of mine. I'm going to lose 30 pounds through diet and exercise. I'm going to back up my computers even better than I have in the past, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. I'm going to read the Mises work, Ludwig von Mises' Human Action, cover to cover, all 800 pages of it. I am going to, as a podcaster, I'm going to also start blogging more and try to do it, get into a habit of blogging something as often as I can, perhaps even once a day at least. There were some cool gifts under the Christmas tree. We played a couple of games. One of the games from BoardGameGeek.com, San Juan, which is a card game spinoff from the number 2 game out there, Puerto Rico. San Juan ranked number 53rd best game at BoardGameGeek.com, a card game. We enjoy that. We've played it a couple times. Also, a card game called Set. And if you're familiar with IQ tests, where you look at patterns of things and try to find the matching patterns, well, that's basically what this card game is. Who can find the patterns the fastest as the cards are laid out on the board? Very interesting game. One of the things that we do when we leave the house is we turn the power, you know, the energy down. We turn the heat down. We turn the water heater down. We leave just a few of the compact fluorescent light bulbs on, maybe outside and inside. And I also turn off my computer. Just to save power, you know, the computer burns a lot of power when it's running. Now, I have been noticing that when I reboot my computer in the past few weeks, it has a little difficulty restarting. It would come up with a kind of a blue screen, not the Windows blue screen, but another boot up blue screen that says memory error. Well, I just cycle the power button, and a couple times later, it comes up just fine. I turned the computer off before we left for the week, came back trying to turn it on, and don't you know, it will not come on at all. It just, I mean, you hit the power button and you hear the fan spin for about 1 second and then it quits and shuts off again. So I think it's a failure somehow electronically in the system. It's a Dell computer. Thank you very much, Dell, for your reliability. 2 years old, 2.5 years old at most. What I've done to solve this problem is I've ordered an identical computer off of eBay, the same model of Dell computer, and I'm hoping that I can swap components and make one that works between the two of them. It'll probably be a couple of weeks before I get everything running there. First of all, I have to get the computer delivered, and then, of course, I have to figure out what parts to swap to make the thing whole. I'm pretty sure that I still have my data. The computer I had two hard drives, one mirroring the other. I can't imagine both have failed simultaneously. Also, I have a backup, an external backup disk. So that's one of my New Year's resolutions, is to have an even better backup system that I can get to from a working computer instead of having to reload the old computer and then load stuff onto it like that. It's also one of the reasons why I'm not going to bring you the results of my 2008 predictions. I think I had 10 or 11 predictions for 2008, and I can't remember them all. They are on the website. I could search for them and find them. But I had been making notes as the years went, as the year progressed, as to what certain things were happening regarding the predictions. And I was going to report that to you at the end of the year. So in a couple of weeks, we'll tally up the results of the 2008 predictions. Now, for example, I know one that failed was I predicted that the LA Galaxy would win the MLS Cup in soccer and David Beckham would score the winning goal. That was way off the mark. They didn't even make the MLS playoffs. I think they were the worst ranked team in the MLS this past year. But I did have one that worked out, and that was that gold would go up. Well, it went up. And then it went back down. And also, I hope within the coming weeks to put together for you my predictions for 2009, for whatever they're worth. It's a lot of fun to see how things we think might happen might turn out at the end of the calendar year. One of the things I'm finding out by not having my computer and not having the iTunes application on that computer and not being able to synchronize my iPhone on that computer with iTunes on that computer, is that downloading podcasts onto the iPhone directly, while it is possible now, is still quite kludgy. For example, if you go in your podcast or your iPod player software on the iPhone and you say get more episodes, well, first thing it does is bring you to a web browser. The second thing it does is bring you up into the iPhone's software of iTunes. You say download. It appears in the download list and then it disappears. And then how do you get back? You have to go, out to the home screen and back to the podcast, the iPod player software on the iPhone in order to play the podcast again. So they haven't made a full loop of getting it and getting back. You have to break the loop and go out and start over again to play your podcast. It's doesn't work very well. Now, I mentioned at the beginning, how do you make $400,000 in 1 month? I'll have a link to an article in the Washington Post. Folks who are writing iPhone applications and selling them for $1 are making lots of money. Well, some folks are, and I imagine a lot of folks aren't making anything. For example, there's one software program that I downloaded about a month ago called Ocarina. And it's really unique in that you play a musical instrument on your iPhone and you actually blow into the iPhone as if you're playing an ocarina. You have four finger holes or finger buttons that you press to change the note. And it's a really unique little application. Well, the guys that wrote it, they're selling it for $1. They figured they'd have, maybe $100,000 in revenue in 1 year. It turns out they think they will end up making $1 million in a year. It racked up $400,000 downloads in less than a month. Well, at a dollar a download, that's $400,000. But also, you have to remember that iTunes gets 30% of that. So they only made $300,000, let's say. A little less than that. Still not too bad. Yeah, but think of all the people that are writing applications that don't make very much at all. And think of all the applications that are free out there. I know of a lot of applications that initially developers were charging, you know, $5 and $10 for it. Then someone else would come along, write a similar application that they charged only $1 for. And then someone else would come along and write an application very similar that they would give away for free. So I've read before where people think that the natural value of information and anything information related is in fact free. And so I guess as more people write applications for the iPhone, the cost of them will come down and down and down, which is good for the consumer. Not so good for the author. The Learning Earnings segment is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. It's the segment where we figure out how to earn our financial freedom. And what we're going to do for 7 episodes of the Mad Money Machine, and we're going to talk about the IFA investing principles. I'll have a link to their About Us page where they describe their investment principles. Their first investment principle is capitalism works. Now, here's what they say. They say capitalism works on average and over time. The statement might be explained by Mark Hebner's estimate that more than 100,000 public companies over 80 years, well, they've earned an average annual profit of about 10% a year. If companies or stockholders of these companies desired capital, they traded their stock certificates for cash from investors. Through this trade, stockholders gave up the stock's future return of about 10% per year. And he says it's currently 9.26% per year. Since 1928, that return has been driven up over the last 80 years and 10 months by the average profits of those simulated and actual S&P 500 companies. This is known as the cost of capital, and the cost of capital is paid to the investors. And on their About Us page with the investment principles, they have links to various terms there that you can dig around and find out more. For example, capitalism. What does capitalism mean? From Investopedia, it's an economic system based on a free market, open competition, profit motive, and private ownership of the means of production. Capitalism encourages private investment and business compared to a government-controlled economy. Investors in these private companies, i.e. shareholders, also own the firms and are known as capitalists. And here's hoping that we move even more towards a capitalist society in 2009. Learning Earning, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. Please go to their website, ifa.com. Sign up for an account with them. If you're leaving your company, transfer your 401k plan to Index Funds Advisors and get in those remarkable Dimensional Fund Advisor funds. So my computer crashed and I'm working exclusively on my MacBook, which I got just a couple of months ago. And I've never had a Macintosh before, so I'm getting used to how it works. And one thing I don't like about the MacBook is the few keys. You know, on most PC Windows notebooks, they try to squeeze in all the keys that you can have, the home and page up and page down and all that sort of stuff. Well, the MacBook doesn't have those three keys, and I miss them. I really like the home, page up, and page down keys. Jim Cramer on his December 17th show said, Madoff's Ponzi scheme is not the biggest Ponzi scheme. He says, we know the truth about Ponzi schemes. We all know the name of the biggest Ponzi scheme in history, and it's not even illegal. In fact, it's run by the U.S. government. And the name of it, well, they call it Social Security. I'll have a link to him saying that on his Mad Money show. I am all over the map today. I'm trying to fit stuff in since the last show a couple of weeks ago. I got new tires on the van before we went on our big 6-hour drive to Huntington. And my tires, when I bought them, they said they had an 80,000-mile road warranty. And I thought that meant that if they wore out, before 80,000 miles that they would give you some money towards a purchase of new ones. Well, mine wore out after 45,000 miles, and I went into the tire place, which I really trust that this place that I go to for all my repairs and oil changes and stuff. And they said that it's just too difficult to get money out of the warranty. And I said, well, what's the good of this warranty if I can't, you know, get any money out of it? And he kind of agreed with me, bottom line is. So it makes me wonder, you know, first of all, he gave me a little bit of hard times for, he said you had to make sure that you rotate the tires every 6,000 miles. You had to have a front end alignment every year. And then he looked at my past records and said, oh, well, there's this one time where you had an oil change after only 8,000 miles. And here's this one time where you had a front end alignment after a year and 4 months. He was kind of hemming and hawing, you know, trying to say that I didn't meet the requirements of the warranty. And so it just makes me think it's not even worth it to try to meet the requirements of the warranty because they're not going to give you anything anyway. So there's my gripe about tires and warranties. A couple of funny news items I saw over the Christmas holidays. And first, let me tell you, a couple of months ago, we get a letter, a couple of letters, actually, in the mail from someplace in Maryland across the river, Potomac River from us, saying you owe us $45. And here's a picture. You went too fast down this little strip of road, and our cameras caught you going too fast. You were going, 45 miles an hour and a 35 miles an hour speed limit or something like that. And so the camera takes your picture. They get the license plate. They go to the database. They look you up. They send you the bill. That's pretty cool. Easy money, isn't it? Well, here's the funny things that happened over the Christmas holidays. Item number one. Men dressed up as Santa Claus take gift boxes and gift wrapping out to the speed cameras and cover them up for the holidays. I just love that idea. And item number two, students in Maryland had a really good idea to use with speed cameras. What they would do, and this would be great to do for the guy who installed the speed cameras, okay? What they would do is they would make a printout of a license plate number on glossy computer paper using the Maryland State license plate logo right in the middle there. They would print out a license plate of someone they knew and perhaps did not like very much. They would tape it to the front and back license plates on their car or some other car, and they would drive fast past the speed cameras. And whoever's license plate they printed up and put on their car would end up with a ticket in the mail. So that would be great for all the people who are in favor of the speed cameras. Let's get their license plates and drive as fast as we can past those speed cameras. It'd be a good idea if you used a similar car than of theirs, probably, too. I thought that was a fun one. I also heard a story, number three. I think this one was in Australia or New Zealand. Down there, they have a not just a speed camera, but a speed camera truck, and it drives around. It's mobile, so you don't know where the speed camera is. The truck goes around and catches people going too fast. Well, some students distracted the driver of the speed camera truck while another one took off the license plate of that truck. And here, you know, they need to learn a lesson from the Maryland guys. But they took off the license plate, attached it to their car, and yes, the speed camera truck got a speed ticket for driving too past its own speed cameras. Well, you know, one of the ways to get feedback back to me here at the Mad Money Machine is go to drop.io/Mad Money Machine and post a comment. You can post one anonymously if you like, or you can leave your name or whatever. You can post files. You can record an audio program. You can post links to other things. And I got one from Aaron. Says, is Euro-Pacific Capital a good firm to invest with? Paul and listeners, I'm strongly considering investing a small to medium percentage of my portfolio with Euro-Pacific Capital. In your opinion, do you think they're a good firm to invest with, and why do you think this is? I want to double check that I will get a decent value for their services, for their fees, and that their investment strategies are at least okay. Concerning their fees, per a broker with Euro-Pacific, we only charge on a buy or sell. There are no management fees, annual fees, quarterly fees, or inactivity fees. For portfolios under 100,000, the buying fee is 3.5%. There's no fee for taking your dividends as a stream of income directly to your checking account. Their broker did say that there is a $50 annual fee from the holding bank of New York Mellon for foreign stocks. It says, do any other brokers cut out the market maker and save about 10% on buying foreign stock? It's in their FAQs. And you can go to their website at europac.net. Thanks in regards, Aaron. And my answer to him is basically, no. First of all, you don't want someone gambling with your money, buying stocks and having fun on your behalf. We know that now that buying individual stocks is a losing proposition to the market. You're buying risk with an individual stock that you're not getting compensated for. Do you understand this? If you buy a large basket of stocks, the risk of each individual stock gets masked, gets reduced, gets almost eliminated because you're investing instead in all of capitalism. But if you buy one company, I mean, imagine buying a basket of mining company stocks, just to pick a sector. They all do well, except for one company had a bad manager or had some specific problem. Maybe they got sued or maybe something blew up somewhere, political unrest. That one company got hurt. Well, that's risk to one company. You don't want to take that risk. You can't beat the entire market by buying one individual company, and neither can Euro Pacific. And let me be clear what I mean when I say you can't beat the market buying one individual stock. Well, of course you can, but the averages say you won't. And also, your risk to return is going to be a lot higher for one individual stock than it would be for a basket of even similar stocks. All right? So that's why you can't beat the market buying one individual stock over buying a basket of all the stocks, and particularly a basket of passively managed stocks. You don't want some guy in there trying to trade in and out of stocks because he's going to get it wrong, as has been proven over time. The second thing is, for Euro Pacific charging a fee of 3.5%, that's, first of all, that's horrendous. Second of all, what do you think their incentive is going to be to buy and sell stocks? Do you think they're going to be incentivized to just buy and hold stocks for the long term? Or do you think they're going to come up with some reason after six or eight months to say, you know what, we need to sell this one stock and buy into shares of another stock? Always look for the incentive. But thank you for the posting at drop.io/madmoneymachine. Anybody else have a comment? Feel free to go out there. All right, for all the fellow churchgoers out there, I've got a link that's pretty amazing for you to watch. It's actually a sermon given in September 2003 by Pastor Rod Parsley at the Breakthrough Church in Columbus, Ohio, called Conquering the Spirit of Debt. I think he had a series on conquering various things. This particular Sunday was Conquering the Spirit of Debt. And it's 49 minutes long, this video sermon from Google Video. You can see him talk about the story of how Paul Warburg, John Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan met with Senator Aldridge at a conference in Jekyll Island to create the Federal Reserve Banking System in America in 1913. And he says, most people hear about the national debt, but few ask what it means or who we owe. I encourage you to watch this sermon about the conquering the spirit of debt. I'll have a link to it in the show notes for show 140. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give it a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Madman Machine Show 140 is John Maynard Keynes. John Maynard Keynes. Actually, it says pronounced Keynes, according to Wikipedia. Born June 5th, 1883. Passed from the mortal coil on April 21st, 1946. Was a British economist whose ideas, called Keynesian economics, have had a major impact on modern economic and political theory, as well as on many governments' fiscal policies. He advocated interventionist government policy, by which the government would use fiscal and monetary measures to mitigate the adverse effects of economic recessions, depressions, and booms. He's one of the fathers of modern theoretical macroeconomics and considered by some to be the most influential economist of the 20th century. And wouldn't it be interesting to have Keynes and Ludwig von Mises in the same room at the same time, speaking with each other and trying to hash it out and figure out which theory of economics is the right one. As you know, Mises was very much a free market, non-government interventionist economist. Now, they say that Keynes had this magnum opus called The General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, written in 1936, in which he laid the foundation for the branch of economics termed macroeconomics today. Now, I guess according to this Wikipedia article, Friedrich von Hayek did critique Keynes, only have Keynes to assert that the treatise no longer reflected his thinking. However, after reading Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, Keynes said, "In my opinion, it is a grand book. Morally and philosophically, I find myself in agreement with virtually the whole of it, and not only in agreement with it, but in deeply moved agreement." Keynes was known, however, to open his letters with such complimentary language. He concluded the same letter with the prophecy, "What we need, therefore, in my opinion, is not a change in our economic programs, which would only lead in practice to disillusion with the results of your philosophy, but perhaps even the contrary, namely an enlargement of them. Your greatest danger is the probable practical failure of the application of your philosophy in the United States." Well, Keynes believed in deficit spending, and Wikipedia talks about the Keynesian ascendancy from 1941 to 1979, but then became out of favor from 1979 to 2007. And then they have a section called Economics, the Keynesian Resurgence of 2008. The financial crisis of 2007-2008 cast doubt on the free market consensus, and that Keynesian thinking was reflected in the appointment by U.S. President-elect Barack Obama of Lawrence Summers, Timothy Geithner, and Christina Romer to their principal economic positions in his administration. Well, congratulations, John Maynard Keynes. You're the guru on Madman Machine Show 140. Yes, thank you for your enthusiastic support there. Well, the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown for 2008 is, by the time you're hearing this, of course, over. And I don't have the spreadsheet. Of course, my computer's crashed, so I'll be restoring that soon, hopefully, and get you the official results. Now, I can tell you, I'm pretty sure that Mudfud is going to win the over 16% risk category for his return. You know, the way we're judging this thing, by the way, is we're looking at risk in three bands. We wanted to find out who could come up with the best portfolio with the least amount of risk in three risk bands: 0 to 8% standard deviation, 8 to 16% annualized standard deviation, and those who went way out on a limb and got the most returns they could for anything above 16%. And the way we're determining who got the best return versus risk is to look at the Sharpe ratio. The Sharpe ratio, if you look that up, basically divides the returns versus the risk and removes some T-bills and things from the risk equation, blah, blah, blah. We're going to look who has the highest Sharpe ratio in those three bands. From the looks of it, looking at AffolioDex.com, I'm thinking Mudfud's going to win the high-risk band. It looks like the low-risk band is going to be won by Cosmo, and it looks like, these are all unofficial results, but it looks like Quasimodo is going to win the medium-risk band. Now, what investments did these folks take? You had to be a contrarian investor in 2008 to win the risk versus return portfolio. Mudfud, of course, the China Bear Fund. Cosmo, let me bring up his investment allocation from FolioDex. VBISX, 100%, and that is the Vanguard Short-Term Bond Index, which, what a winner. Ding, 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 what a winner in 2008 was. Short-term bonds did, in fact, do probably one of the best asset classes for 2008. And Quasimodo, let's bring up Quasimodo's portfolio right now. loading that up in foliodex.com. Quasimodo had four investments: Vanguard long-term bond, 50%, American Century Target Fund, 25%, PIMCO Commodity, 15%, and American Century, 10%. These are unofficial results. I don't know who exactly is going to come out on top on the spreadsheet. Find out when I get my computer back. And the clock just turned over 4 o'clock here on the last day, the last trading day of 2008. Let's look at the markets. U.S. indexes, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 34% for 2008. S&P 500 down 38% and NASDAQ down 40%. The Dow Jones Financials Index down a whopping 55%. International indexes, Germany down 40%, 4-0. FTSE 100 down 31%. Japan Nikkei down 42%. Shanghai and China down 65%. In 2008. How about gold? Gold is up 5.5%. Crude oil down 54%. And the dollar index up 6%. Up 6%. So now that the holidays are over and you're getting back to look at what are you going to do to invest in 2009? What are you going to do? How are you going to deal with your financial freedom? I would appreciate if you'd turn your attention to the Mad Money Machine. Make sure you subscribe in iTunes. I would appreciate your feedback. You can email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can leave a message at drop.io/madmoneymachine. You can call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. Follow me at Twitter, twitter.com/madmoneymachine. Follow me at delicious.com/madmoneymachine. Skype me at Mad Money Machine. What else is there? Dig/Mad Money Machine. I don't know. Anyway, you can find Mad Money Machine on the internet. There I am. And I am Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money and it takes a crashed computer to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, I'd like for you to visit the website of Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. You need to do two things. You know, the beginning of the year is a particularly great time to take their risk capacity survey. What should you be investing in? Well, how much risk should you be taking with your investments? The risk capacity survey will tell you. This is a great tool to use. There's a 5-question version, there's a 25-question version, and there's a version for your 401k plan. Sit down, take a few minutes, answer the risk capacity survey, and find out just what amount of risk you should be taking with your investments. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. Just want to say thank you for being with me in 2008. Let's have a fantastic and fun 2009. Happy New Year, everybody.